With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
We are delighted to have partnered with NordVPN again for this season. We partnered with them last year and they are, of course, a supporter of Rangers FC as an official sponsor there. And best of all, we can give you an exclusive NordVPN deal. If you go to nordvpn.com/heartandhand, you will get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan and one additional month for free, completely risk-free. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee with Nord. And look, I use this product. I would highly recommend it. I used to work in web, so I know how easy it is to steal people's data, especially if you're using a Wi-Fi system that is a shared one, or you're using 4 or 5G, then your details can be out there. With NordVPN, they're absolutely not. And there are other advantages to it as well. You can watch sporting events that maybe aren't being shown in your region. You can purchase flights from different virtual locations, and they do make your flights cheaper. This is very, very useful. What a price is in the UK isn't the same as what a price is in America or a price is on the continent. NordVPN can save you money. You can buy purchasing subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price, and you protect your data while travelling and using public Wi-Fi. I keep coming back to that. Anyone who's at the hassle of a cancelled card will know what I'm talking about. So all you need to do is go to nordvpn.com/heartandhand and you'll get a huge discount off your plan and 1 month additional free, completely risk-free. I urge you to do it. Hello everyone and welcome to Heart and Hand, the Rangers podcast. My name is David Edgar and as always I am your host and I'm joined this week by two of the A-team. First of all, from the wilds of West Lothian, it's Cammy Bell.
David, how are you my friend? Are you keeping well?
I'm all right, Cammy, I must admit. Rangers won, all is well in the world. Might even have a transfer to talk about. I mean, these are the days.
Rangers often like to wait till we record podcasts. And then during that, they will then announce the signing. Yeah, so this could be the trigger. This could be the catalyst that we've been waiting on for Raskin to join us.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And joining us to discuss Raskin and the match at the weekend in particular, it's Andy McGowan.
Thanks for having me on. Really excited about that amortisation from the transfer fee.
On that then, let's just kick off. Nicholas Raskin has been linked with Rangers for a while. He was somebody that Rangers were interested in the summer when Glenn Kamara transfer bids for him were rejected. I think that kind of put Raskin on the back burner, but Rangers have gone back in. He's out of contract in the summer, as we know, but there's a lot of interest in him. Belgian under 21 international reports in Belgium, so it's not, we can't even say if it's Scottish press or that's the club at our side feeding it. There's reports in Belgium saying there's interest in him from Schalke 04, from Wolfsburg, from Stuttgart in the Bundesliga, as well as an offer from Feyenoord. So it looks as though Rangers have decided to just go in and get this done early, Andy, with a fee said to be about £1 million. I'm I know it's, it looks a bit more in euros, but £1 million plus add-ons and plus a sell-on. And I have noticed, and I was a little surprised, that there's some complaints on social media. I know you're always going to get complaints about everything. And so, I mean, if you send a check to, you know, UNICEF, they come back and go, I don't like the font on that. I get that. But people are saying, oh, it's a ridiculous amount of money to spend on a guy who's going to be out of contract in 6 months. I'm not so sure that it is. And the reason I say this is, now we know that England is mental for money. We know that. But Arsenal bought Leandro Trossard, £27 million the other week. We're seeing players, last 6 months of the contract, move between European leagues. I think we've been skewed in Scotland by the fact that whenever Rangers have picked up a Bosman and then said, we'll try and get him in early, it's been for a nominal fee. Glenn Kamara, famously, of course, but for a nominal fee. I think that has kind of skewed us, that you only pay buttons for these guys and get them in a few months early. I'm not sure in the real world that that is the case. I think, you know, I remember, for example, when Rangers had a pre-contract with John Lundstrom, they approached Sheffield United, and Sheffield United were after £4.5 million. So I wonder if it's not them, it's us.
Well, it's all relative, because for me, £1 million for Raskin with 6 months to go in his contract is buttons. It's relative to the player. So I think, I mean, I've often said, and it's a bit rich coming from me, that a lot of your support just needs to get back to the football, enjoy the football, and worry less about the minutiae of finances. And because he's a good player, he's in demand, therefore it's supply and demand, and you need to move a wee bit faster, and you might actually have to pay a wee bit more than you anticipate. And that's what's happened here. We could wait until the summer and get him for nothing, but you then run the risk of a massive risk that, as you say, somebody else usurps us and turns his head. So it's necessity here. If we don't do this now, we don't actually get a deal across the line, then we will lose him. Now, I don't know if it's finalised yet. It certainly sounds, for the reports in Belgium, like it's there or thereabouts. But for a footballing side, I think it's the right thing as well. I think we know that it's better to have a player in and acclimatised, like Kamara. When he did it, he come in and he gets a full 4 or 5 months a season to acclimatise and get used to the management, the club and the country. So I think it's the right thing to do. It's not a massive amount of money in the grand scheme of things. I joked about amortisation there, but if he's a 4.5 year contract, you know, that's what, £250 grand on the accounts for the financial fair play sustainability. So I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's the right thing to do at the right time for the right player.
Cammy, on that, Andy makes a point there about, you know, sometimes we should just focus a wee bit more on the football. And I think it's understandable why we do this after everything we've been through. And I do get that. I've got to say, though, that, yeah, as a Rangers fan, I want a midfielder in a lot more than I don't want them spending 1.6 million or whatever in euros it is, right? I if we'd ended the window without them, that to me, and obviously still could, it's not been announced yet, but ending this window without a new midfielder is to me a bigger disaster than spending a bit to get somebody early. I don't know what your thoughts on that are.
Listen, I agree with that, and you know, Andy's right, and I mean, much as it's unusual to hear Mr. McGowan saying, let's just spend some cash while we've got it, he's right, and you're right as well. The bottom line with this is we need to think a little bit further forward. And if we're able to get a guy in now and have to pay money for him, the best thing that can happen at this deal, David, is that he comes here, knocks out of the park, and in 2 years, 3 years or whatever, we're selling him for a massive profit. I know that there's been discussions as part of the rumour mill that, you know, there's a sell-on fee, etc. And I get all of that. But if he comes in, he hits the ground running, he nails in a place, because let's face it, we need to be able to get starters. We're not talking about getting guys in now that in you know, 18 months' time will then eventually come good and not challenge who's in there at the moment. We need to be able to do that. And so there's also an element where I think you're right. I think if we'd went through the window without at least one more signing, I would have been pretty disappointed with that. It sounds to me like the negotiations have been you know, tough waters to navigate, and that's fine, because that would suggest to me that we are committed to getting him, and he is, from all reports, again, keen to move. So let's just get it over the line. Let's get it done. You know, I think we've all been vocal of previous transfer windows and where we'd like to see more work completed. And I think that we've all said very recently within this transfer window, it'd be nice if it could get done well ahead of time to get him in and get embedded. Sometimes it doesn't work like that in the real world. So if we can get it over the line, I'd be delighted. I think, you know, we hopefully do have other irons in the fire, but we're coming close to the deadline completing now. So I think that we are looking pretty positive in this to complete. So yeah, it's a good one for us. And I think that, you know, we just have to be able to get over the line. That's the most important thing. And that's what the board have to be able to deliver for us now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, it's just a case of, yeah, we could save 1.5 million or we could get him and he could help us win two cups. So,
and it's, and, me, it's and that's no-brainer. It. But I think for me, you're absolutely right. I think that the midfield in particular needs new blood, right? We saw that, you know, well, we have been seeing that for you know, a number of months, if
all
not
season,
much more.
Really.
Yeah. So, you're absolutely, but I've got to emphasise that point. I want a starter. I want someone who's going to come in and challenge for a place, mm-hmm. knock people out of the way if he has to in order to be able to try and get onto the starting 11 and been able to feature. And listen, you're absolutely correct. If he can get us to two cups, brilliant. If he can cut down, hopefully, the points deficit in the league, even better. But at some point, you can't just keep relying on the same bodies again and again and again. Correct. We need someone to be able to try and come into it. Now, I'm sure I'm not the only guy, as we're about to come on to, had his heart in his mouth when he saw the Ryan Jack tackle. And you know, it was a sore one. You could see that. And then immediately your thought is, Christ, it's not like we're overladen with midfielders that can take his place. So for all of the reasons that we've just mentioned, I think it's critical.
Yeah, well, let's move on to the game at the weekend. Rangers took on St Johnstone at Ibrox, second time in a week. Andy, president of the John Bennett Fan Club, chief board for later, famously for it. And I saw you were not a happy bunny with what you saw on Saturday.
Aye, because everyone thinks I'm a happy clapper, and you two will certainly know, given you're in my circle of trust. That
you're a torn-faced bastard. No, I know. People have got the wrong idea.
I just thought that, and I'll preface it by saying I think we're going very much in the right direction under Beale, but there's still some things that were happening under Gio that are still happening under Beale, and you've got to presume it's due to the actual players we're talking about now, and it's the attacking side of things. I think relative to the team we were playing on Saturday, which is St Johnstone, right, we know what level they're at. We know that there's, you know, we should be beating them 99 times out of 100 at home. I just thought that with them going down to 10 men and for 45 minutes, I thought our attacking potency was abysmal. I thought, you know, I really thought we'll go in and score four goals here at least. And you know, pep the confidence, send a message. And I just thought that we controlled the game to the point of, actually, well, didn't they control the game? I'll be honest with you. I thought he couldn't tell that St John's had 10 men at times. And I thought they stretched themselves across the park. So there was that 45 minutes in the second half, I thought, you know, there's something not quite right there in terms of players. And I think the tweet that you're referring to there, Davey, I think I closed it by saying, you know, if we finish this window, we just can't. Well, Cantwell's a great signing, but if we finish this window with just him, I think it's a failure, because we know now that the squad it needs refreshed, and I'm talking about 3, 4, 5 starters, and we can't just let this window slip away again and no add to it. And I'm pleasantly surprised at Cantwell. I'm really surprised at Raskin, because, you know, my mantra was it's a hard window and you don't get the players you want, but that's been blown out the window completely. If we do complete Raskin, they're there to be done if you do it in the right way, and if that means paying a wee bit extra a wee bit earlier, then so be it. So that's why I left Ibrox on Saturday a wee bit deflated, and you know, Ibrox was empty in the 80th minute, even more so than usual. So I think I was in the only one sitting watching it thinking this is subpar.
Yeah, look, caveated with I think that the run of form we're on is brilliant, and I'd far rather be winning than not winning, right? So all of that is true. But equally, there were some things, and this is not just us. The manager said afterwards, he goes, even if we'd scored another two goals or three goals, and he said, and we should have scored more goals. He said, but even if we had, people would be going, oh, that was a great performance. And he said, whereas I, and this is a quote, I saw enough red flags out there today to let me know that I've still got a lot of work to do here. Now, that's a quote from the manager. And I think something I keep coming back to is this team coasts. It quite regularly slips into coasting. And I think that at times it does it way too early in matches. And it does it in periods in matches. And that's what has led to a number of matches in which we should have been very comfortable actually being a lot closer than they should have been. Because they have a tendency, I think, to relax during a game. And they've been good at being able to switch it back on again and get winners and whatnot. But I felt that, as you said, Andy, you know, I thought we were really good for the first 20 minutes. And we got the goal, and you'd expect it to go. And then the game does get a bit bitty because of all the referee and stuff, which we will come to, right? The red cards and stuff. But at the start of the second half, Rangers are a goal up and playing 10 men at home. A side who, by the way, have lost the last six matches. Rangers, I think, again, start the second half well. Managers obviously have been saying, go out and get this put to bed. They do. They go 2-0 up and then stop. Absolutely, completely stop. And as I say, Cammy, I can understand Andy's frustration. I get the arguments that, well, you know, we've got big games coming up, which we do. We're going to talk about Tynecastle on Wednesday. That'll be a really good, really tough, but a really good game between two form sides in terms of results. But I do think that for a side that, you know, maybe hasn't quite set the heather on fire a lot this season, it was an opportunity.
I hate to sound really basic with it, David, and you know, I like to think that we've got a, you know, a certain level of listener that wants to be able to hear probably something a little bit more educated than this. But my feeling is we need to batter somebody. We need to be able to try and absolutely get a chance to turn someone over. And right now, I don't think anyone listening to this, I don't think either of you believe that that's possible at the moment, even when you have a man advantage and you're playing against teams that are absolutely out of form. It feels so much to me like we miss a swagger. We miss a little bit of gallousness to be able to look at turning a team over, really putting them to the sword, and then being able to take it from there. And it's a paradox, because ultimately you look at our results and you look at the form since the management team came in, and every Rangers fan would bite your hand off for that. Do you know what I mean? And the only, and I use this term loosely, but the only, you know, blot on the jotter is the Celtic game, and we were 3 minutes away from winning that. So by and large, it would have been as perfect a start as you could get, but we disconnect because we don't believe the performances are good enough. And for the reasons that you've mentioned, I think that the manager has lifted a malaise since he came in, but there is still elements of it still there. I think the team look like they're playing a lot of football, which, let's face it, they should have and probably could have been playing more had we represented ourselves better within Europe, although that was always going to be a tough ask. That all being said, we're now confined to domestic competitions. And maybe that's a problem. Maybe it's the fact that we saw a European run last season in the second half of the season, which maintained its own, you know, momentum and kept them going and created its own synergy to do that. And now they feel like they've not got that. I think as well as we've been talking about transfers, I don't think it's going to happen, you know, in this window, because we're pretty late in the day, but it needs transfers, it needs movement, it needs some of those players taken out of there. That will happen one way or another anyways, we know. But I can understand why both of you guys feel. I was exactly the same. I'm not skipping out of Ibrox at the moment, which sounds incredibly arrogant because they say we are winning. I just still feel there is just this lack of connection between the playing group and the fans at the moment for how this season's turned out.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to moan. I agree with Andy. I felt going into this game that, yeah, we're going to put on a show, we're going to go here and we're going to smash them. Because I thought, you know, we'd played the week before. St John's were not a good side. You can see that. It was a bad pitch. We weren't in the best of form. We got the job done. But we did the full week to prepare, new signing coming in, and I thought, yeah, Rangers are going to go out and smash them. And it parts during the match did, you know, were comfortably the better side. Never in any danger, by the way, I felt, of dropping points. So I don't want, you know, to come across that way. I just think that, again, it's this, have we put together a 90-minute performance? And we haven't. And again, it was bits and enough, more than enough, to get the victory. I think there is just a sense of frustration that there could be a little bit more there. On the lack of goals, Andy, now the manager pointed after the match to something I think everyone would agree with, which is that Alfredo played really well, but he missed good chances. He's got to score at least one of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of unarguable, really.
No, so, I mean, I don't want to be saying the same thing in every podcast ever going, but, I mean, Čolak versus Morelos, it's always Morelos for me, because the team, the whole team, in particular, front four or five, function better with him because he knits it together. But his finishing has been... It's been really, really poor, and I thought it was abysmal on Saturday. And I think when Čolak comes in, you get the opposite. You know, you'll anticipate that he'll finish everything that he gets a half chance at, but his all round play is nowhere near the same as Morelos's. And
yeah, you know, I think Čolak scores the chance in the first half, but there's no way in God's green earth he can play that assist that Alfie played out, which was a world-class assist. It was absolutely superb. And I suppose that's a dichotomy, isn't it? You've got the perfect striker if the two of them have a baby.
Well, I mean, I've been absolutely scathing of Morelos because of where he left is, not just the start of the season, the first quarter of the season, his lack of professionalism or whatever you want to call it during the close season and whatever happened under Van Bronckhorst at the start, left us in the shit and cost our team dearly because he is an integral part to our team. And for that reason, I know I would never renew his contract. And I think, you know, for being honest, we'd more to play with in the squad. He wouldn't be in the squad for that reason. You'd have frozen him out, but we need him. So, you know, Beale's referred to the fact he wants a different kind of number nine. So I don't know what that means, whether it's a rangy striker, you know, like what he had at QPR under with Dykes, I don't know. But we've got a decision to make, Morelos. I don't think there's any noise him getting a new contract. Certainly no been improved terms if there is. But I thought that was probably a difference, right? If we're being honest about it, if he puts one or two of those away and we go away with a 4-0, then we're not talking about this just now. I think the elephant in the room is Celtic. They're scudding teams, and I think everybody's got it in the back of their mind that if this was Celtic, they would have taken 5 after them. Now, that isn't my way of thinking, but even I'm thinking it, because I generally do not live my life judging myself or my team or my club against them for one thing, right, except the points on the league table. But I think that is in everybody's thinking, because I think everybody knows that if we're going to be serious about competing with them over the longer term, we're going to have to match them for goals, because the goal difference just now is significant. And I'm a great believer, if you look at league table and the points and the goal difference, it tells you everything you need to know in terms of what's going to happen going forward. So we need, and Beale said it, you know, I think everything we're saying here, if Beale's in the same room as us, I don't think he's going to disagree with us. I think he knows this. He's said as much as you say, David.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was. Yeah, I think he was a little disappointed when he came in after the game. I don't think he. I think he judges each game as it is. And I've seen him come in after. You know, he was delighted with a victory at Perth because, as he said, it was a Cowfield third game in 6 days. Got the win, got the clean sheet. Things we could have done better, but he was really happy with the result. Whereas I've seen him come in after that, or when we beat Motherwell at Ibrox. I mean, after we beat Motherwell, he came in, he went, 3 points, 3 goals, that's about it, really. You know, he doesn't try to kid on that what he's watched isn't what we've watched.
See, the thing is, and this is the other point around the squad and freshening it up and transfer window and everything, with a 5-sub rule, there's no excuse for Rangers or Celtic to be in the position we were at half-time and no go on and do, you know, 3, 4, 5 goals. That is the truth of the matter. Now, that either points to the bench not being strong enough, or the pattern of the team isn't set up for, you know, explosive goal scoring exploits. I think we are. We've got a team. Beale's an attacking minded manager, and the team will have been set up to do that. And we couldn't do it for whatever reason. And in fact, St Johnston, as I say, stretched us a wee bit in terms of possession, which I thought was unacceptable.
Yeah, I think that he was a wee bit kind of frustrated with the sort of flatness shown. But let's look at some of the positives. As I say, you know, when we did play well, and I'd say that was the opening 20 of each half, then we looked really good, slick, made chances, moved the ball about well. And I thought it was a pretty promising debut from Todd Cantwell, Cammy. Now, it was his first start since November, mid-November. Michael Beale said actually his last start came against QPR when he was there. He said, you know, I needed it. I only had about an hour on the legs, but it was good to get it. It'll take a wee while to get him in. But, you know, intelligent player, wants the ball, wants to get on it, make things happen, and, of course, played a part in that second goal, which, by any definition, that second goal was a peach.
Oh, yeah, it was, for sure. As Andy mentioned there, the setup from Morelos was absolutely, you know, phenomenal. I thought he looked good. I thought he looked lively. I thought it speaks of his professionalism, Davey, to say that, you know, 3 months after your first start, you can come in and play 60 minutes. You know, yeah, of course, you look at, and we discussed it, you know, in terms of the context, yeah, St. Johnson go down to 10, etc. But I still thought he worked very, very hard. I think that there was elements where, with it being his debut at home, and again, probably a degree of nervousness because it's his first start for a good wee while, he probably played it safe a couple of times, which I've got absolutely no problem with. But the reason why I mentioned that specifically is because I also think there was a couple of creative moments when he took a bit of a risk and it came off for him. And the good thing about that is that we can start to see more of that as he settles in, as his confidence grows, as he gets to know his teammates, their movements, etc., etc. I was very pleased with him. I think that he looks like he is coming in and he's settling in to what he believes should be a starting position. And he looks like he wants to be able to stake his claim for that, and all power to him. So yeah, very, very pleased with him. I think he could make a big difference for us when we need it across the course of the remainder of this season.
I thought Glenn Kamara looked very good as well, Andy. That's, obviously he got the goal. And it's a weird one with Glenn Kamara because he's such a good finisher when you get him there. But he you'll never have a shot from outside the box. He just will not do it. We know that. But see, any time, and it's funny, I mentioned this on our reports on Saturday. When I saw it was him who'd been played in, I was like, that's a goal. And funnily enough, I don't have that confidence in all our players, Alfie for one. You know, it's such a strange quirk because he's so calm and composed when he gets into those. But I thought his overall game on Saturday was really decent.
No, you're right about his finishing. His finishing is usually passes it into an eight,
yep,
rather than
calmly,
blast it. Which
no
is,
chance for the keeper.
It's a hard thing to do. But the problem with Kamara is that he doesn't get in those positions often enough for us. Now, it could be a symptom of the fact that he's a wee bit deeper for Rangers than he is when he plays for Finland or whatever. And I don't think he's a goal-scoring midfielder, but that doesn't mean he shouldn't be getting his 5 goals a season. And I think the more responsibility you give him, I don't know if that suits him. I've often spoke about him being peripheral. When Van Bronckhorst came in, he made him his number 6, more or less, and it didn't really happen for him, and then he reverted back to type. But I say on a game like that on Saturday, he should be good enough to control the game and be the main midfielder. And I thought he dictated the play. He's sometimes a wee bit negative for me, a wee bit too safe. I'd like to see him, the kind of pass Cantwell made, you know, take an opportunity, take a chance to slice through teams. He's capable of it. I just think sometimes he's just a wee bit timid in terms of doing that. And whether it's just ball possession or whatever, I don't know, but he's good enough to do that. Glenn Kamara is a really, really good football player, and I think we sometimes take him for granted, but I think there's more to come from him. Now, whether that's at Rangers or elsewhere, I don't know.
That's a question, really, isn't it?
I think there's more to come from Glenn Kamara. I think he's got another level he needs to reach because he's capable of it. And it goes back to what we've spoken about with players like Aribo and so forth. Have you got the mentality to become a killer? And I don't mean a killer in terms of goal scoring, but just that psyche that makes you a top-class football player. Maybe he's just that wee bit softer than what's required. Maybe that's why he never made it at Arsenal. I don't know. But he's an asset. There's no question about it. And the fact he's under contract is a bonus to us because if he plays like he played on Saturday over a longer period, then his reputation that he built under Rangers will be maintained, and at some point we'll either be able to sell him on or, you know, utilise him.
Yeah, I mean, on form, and he walks into the team every week, and it's the fact
should.
That he should. That's basically it. Yes, he should, because ability is unquestionable. Cammy, my qualified referee friend. It wouldn't be Scottish football if Rangers got a decision without people being incredibly upset about it. So much so, in fact, that Sky Sports got Mark Reynolds on to say that he felt that Ryan Jack's tackle, for which he was booked, should have been a penalty kick, despite the fact that it took place in the St Johnstone penalty area. Such as the level of punditry we get up here, which is obviously why we exist. So I suppose I shouldn't complain about it too much. But three decisions. The first one, a foul by Nicky Clark, in which a red card was awarded. VAR obviously then said, nope, you're fine, you don't need to go and check that. Then Ryan Jack, a couple of minutes later, and let's just be upfront here, makes a really stupid tackle. He didn't need to do it. I think he was a bit pissed. He took a sore one. He got a gash on his shin. I think he's had a wee bit of the red mist that's come down. He's went in. Straight leg tackle, no doubt about it. My initial thought watching it was, I wouldn't be surprised if that gets upgraded to a red. The VAR official suggests Willie Colum goes into the look. He goes into the look and stays with his yellow card, which is not something you see that often, to be honest. And to be honest, the only referee in Scotland who, if you'd said to me the referee in Scotland would do that, I'd have picked Colum because he's a throwing wee bastard. So I kind of figured that might be what you would see from him. But your thoughts on both those red cards? I'll be totally honest. I thought Nicky Clark's was a red card. Haven't seen it back. I think it's a red card. Don't think he's trying to do anybody, but he goes in, studs up, catches him. It's dangerous. I thought it was a red. I can see why with Ryan Jacks that his foot is low and I think that saves him. But like I say, hand on heart, I wouldn't have been raging if he'd been sent off for that.
I agree. I think that my view from the main stand, I didn't see as to the studs being up because I was behind the incident. But I could tell from Jack's reaction that he caught him. The intent is the question. And I don't think Nicky Clark, I think it's a clumsy challenge, but it's a dangerous challenge. And I think that the fact that Robertson's so close to it, I think he sees it at speed, sees it in real time.
Call him, not Robertson.
Call him, so. No, but I mean, no, in terms of the initial decision before VAR even gets involved in it. Because I think that because it happens so close to the referee, then what happens at that stage is he makes a decision and VAR's there probably to back up the decision. It's probably the best way I can put it, because that's ultimately what VAR is there to do, is to help protect the referee's decision when something of that, you know, a game-defining event can occur. So I think that was the correct decision. I was, you've said it perfectly, I was fuming when I saw the Jack challenge, because I immediately thought at that point he's going to go here. And I did think it was red. It's the kind of challenge, and you boys all know what I'm talking about with this, that you're doing that against the guy who's done you, which obviously couldn't do because Clark was off the park. But he's just seen the red and he's went through, and I actually thought it would have been a red. Having had the opportunity since the game to see the replays and stuff, I think we're lucky that Colum keeps them in the park. But yeah, I'm not convinced. I'm really genuinely not convinced that that's not a red. But listen, you know, these things come out in the wash, so we'll take it from there. And I just feel it's. I think the problem you've got in these situations is there's two things. First of all, you think about how it'd be if it was a player of yours. So in which case you're thinking it should, you know, it should be a red. And then the second thing is, you know, is that excessive? Does it go over the top? And I really do think that it does. So, yes, as I say, I think we were given the right reward in the Clark challenge. I think we potentially could have got away with one with the Jack one.
The penalty, I thought was a penalty. And
yep.
I'm a bit, yeah, right, okay, good. So I'm glad that, because I couldn't understand, other than Rangers got it, people complain it's a penalty. I don't like the rule either. Okay.
No, it's terrible. The problem with this now is that the handball rule has... there's an irony about the fact, David, that we've now got this technology and we've got the opportunity to have loads of different angles and replays, etc., so that you can come to a definitive judgment. But yet, the grey area and of the handball rule is just... it's ridiculous and it needs refined, because, you know, if you look at the Dundee United Celtic game on Sunday, the player actually puts his hand up quickly hits his hand in and he tries to bring it, that's an obvious handball.
Yeah.
But the amount of times we've discussed this, even within a Rangers context, where you've seen handballs given, not given, where it's almost at point blank range, you've got no idea what you can do within that and you can't get your hand out of the way of it. So you can't put folding money in what you think the decision will be, and then obviously at least the referee has a monitor to check. It needs more definition. I hate to sound like Michael Stewart in any kind of walk of life, but it needs more definition about what can happen with this, because I just think players are at the stage now where they're absolutely terrified to jump, to be able to put their arms out to any degree, because if it hits off a player, then hits them. You've seen penalties given for that
happened to us.
Yep.
You know, and look, I don't like the rule either, right? I agree with you. I think we need a wee bit more common sense on penalty decisions for handball. But under the rules, that was a penalty. So, you know, fair enough. And it's happened against us. So I was okay with that one. Andy, you know, you've heard me and Cammy's point. As I say, look, I do understand why Jack didn't get sent off, because his foot is low, right? So I can understand. Just going on when we saw it live, instantly my phone lit up with messages from friends who were at the game or watching at home, and they all went, what did he do that for? And I think that to me was what was telling.
First of all, can we pause for a moment of hilarity at the concept that Colm is somehow favouring us in some kind of grand conspiracy?
Yeah, I know, it's just...
just laughable. But I thought that during the game, I didn't think the Clark tackle was a red card in real time, and I was quite surprised to see it as a red card. Having seen it back, I think it's a borderline red card. I think he's very unlucky. But if you have your studs up that high, then you're running the risk. You're making the referee have a decision. And to Colm's defence, he was pretty close to it. And you could see how sore it was for Jack. You know,
I was the other side of the stand for you, and I saw where he caught him. If you like, where you sit, you're the other side, and you'd be looking through people to get to it, where it was kind of right in front of me, and I thought he's going, just because of where he caught him. It was shin high and it was studs, and I know he didn't mean it. I know he's lost the flight of the ball a wee bit and he's surprised that Jack's there, but it is dangerous. The fact that Ryan Jack got hurt, it kind of tells you.
No question about it. I was actually in the main stand on Saturday for a change, but...
Oh, well, in that case, you were wrong then, you tit. You should have seen it.
Well, that's...
Try to help him out there, Cammy. You know, I try to give him a... Exactly.
Try and give him a bit of leeway. He was too busy talking to John Bennett about how great the squad was.
He's ignoring me. See, the thing is, but... I said a couple of weeks ago on Twitter that I think the fact that VAR exists is keeping folk a wee bit more honest, and he's probably thought, you know, that's a red card. But I think in the past they've gave the yellows for that. With the Jack one, I think it all rests on how high his foot is, and the fact that it didn't go through the guy's ankle. I may be wrong here, right? But I thought it was more his foot than his ankle. I could see it being a red card on another day. I could see it being a yellow card. It's borderline. I've seen Rangers players have tackles like that against them all the time, and it's been a yellow card, so I'm not going to lose much sleep over it. The whole kind of hyper-analysis of decisions that go for and against us is getting a bit tiresome, to the point where I just ignore it. But I think at some point Rangers are going to have to see, even in a kind of press conference where Beale's just quite safe, make a joke of it, because it's farcical. It is getting farcical.
No, I mean, it's everything. I mean, honest to God, there's going to be a game we got a corner, and it's going to be 3 days of analysis in the papers about it. It really is. But we get the victory, and now we head off to Tynecastle on Wednesday night. And look, Hearts are playing really well. They got a 0-0 draw at Livy at the weekend, which kind of stymied their momentum a wee bit. But I saw them in the Edinburgh Derby. They look good. They're potent up front. Never an easy place to go anyway, Cammy. I think that's a real test for Rangers, and you know, one I expect us to pass, but we'll need to... I don't think we'll be able to play in bits and bobs in this game.
No, it's going to take a step up, as you rightly say, and as you mentioned at the top of the show, David, obviously been through in West Lothian. I know plenty of Hearts fans through here. They are looking forward to it, for the reasons that you mentioned with regards, you know, they're playing well. Obviously went to East Lothian Road very recently and turned Hibs over. I know Hibs are in a bit of a kind of crisis at the moment, but
Hibs raised their game against Arsenal.
I think it might have lifted. Slightly at the weekend.
Yeah. So, but you know, obviously going into that Edinburgh derby, you know, Hibs wanted to be able to try and get something out of it. They couldn't because Hearts, I think, were just too strong for them. And they've got a number of key players at the moment who are playing well for them. And listen, you know, Hearts can hurt us. I think I've got a little bit of that fear going to Tynecastle. I don't really overly enjoy going there. As you say, obviously, the draw with Livy is maybe giving them a little bit of kind of second thoughts, but I'll be honest with you, I think they'll be motivated for this. We need to be able to see this. And outside of the Old Firm game, I think this is arguably Michael Beale's hardest domestic challenge now. So, yeah, he's going to have to be able to try and get something out of them. And we've spoken a lot about Raskin being able to come in. I don't know about you guys. I would keep him out of this just now. I don't think that's fair for him to come into. Let's just give him Ross County. But it's going to be a very, very difficult game. We're going to have to make sure that we go there. The however you want to term it, the complacency, the malaise, the kind of, you know, we've got more gears that we can go into. That has to go on Wednesday night, and we have to make sure that we're at the top of our game for it, because, you know, Hearts won't rest. Even if we're 1-0 up, Hearts will continue to keep coming for us. So, yeah, we need to be able to put a very strong and confident performance, I feel.
Andy?
Tynecastle's Tynecastle, and it's usually dictated by who starts the game well. I've got to be honest, because usually, well, not usually, but I've seen it on occasion, they come out of the traps, you know, they force issue in terms of getting corners and keeping the game down at our end. And I've seen us wilt more than once, and it kind of scars you. But I've also seen the opposite, where we come out, control the game, get a goal, and their crowd don't exactly, you know, lift their team. Sometimes I think they can be as crushed by their home support as sometimes the pressure we feel at Ibrox. So this is a major, major test. And that's why Saturday, you know, I would have liked to have, not that it makes any difference in reality, but, you know, a wee bit of confidence in terms of goal scoring would have lifted my spirits a wee bit going into this. Jack's doubtful. I think it's his type of game, so I hope he makes it. And strangely enough, I hope he starts Sakala. And I know that's a big sea change for the start of the season, but I think he's our most potent goal threat. And for the kind of game it is, I think he is the one that I would be looking to get their defenders turning, facing their own goal, stuff like that. That's my thoughts, Davey, on that. MD's got a spare ticket, and, you know, you don't care about going, just let me know.
Yeah, on that, not being on the telly, Hearts Rangers, they should be on the telly, you know. And I get that the way the scheduling went and whatnot, but, you know, this is part of this whole kind of telly deal madness, that this is a game that should be available easy enough with it, you know, all the pay-per-view nonsense, but it is what it is.
The SPFL, I know she's asking for impossible, some sense, but there needs to be an addendum to the TV deal, in that if a game's not on TV and it's not affecting Sky, or it's just Sky now, isn't it? If it's not affecting them, then the clubs should have the ability to create their own online event. Or, as I said in the extra the other day, you could have Edmondson House open for 1,200 folk or whatever it takes, and we could be charging 10, 15, 20 quid a heat, because I think we would, you know, that is something I think could happen, that we become a destination for beanbags. But that's another story. I just think it's ridiculous that we talk about long and weary about the image of our game. We know about plastic pitches, we know about all the ridiculous stuff that happens, and then you've got a showcase game, which, you know, usually it's a ding-dong game, you know. There's usually something happens in a game at Tynecastle for Rangers Hearts. Why is it on the telly? Apart from the inconvenience for me, you and everybody else, it's going to then log into Hearts TV, and I bet you can't handle it.
But I think to your point as well, Andy, and I know that you've spoken a lot about this, whether we want to realise it or not, Scottish football is still in a pandemic recovery. This is potential cash injection that we can give clubs. So I know that obviously we're biased because we're talking about Hearts and Rangers because obviously we love our football club, but I can guarantee there will be other games and other schedule fixtures that the same kind of thing can happen. So exactly as you say there, you can give it to the option of Sky, BT, Viaplay, whoever, but if none of them want it, then you've got the capability to broadcast it. Why would you choose not to do that? And even if, and I don't want to do it, but even if we had to give the SFA or the SPFL some cut of it, okay, fair enough, but it's money that's sitting waiting to be spent, because I can guarantee the three of us would have bought it. But no, another opportunity missed. Thanks so much to the archaic thinking of those who run Scottish football.
It's just saying, third versus second, total sellout, going to be a cracking game. Yeah, you know, instead we'll show matches in empty stadiums that are played on tatty fields that are really rubbish. Anyway, I digress. Just before we go, actually, Andy mentioned their new Edmonton house. Cammy, you went on Saturday. What was your initial thoughts?
Yeah, it's good. I think there's obviously more to come. I think it's fair. I think what I'm really excited about, David, more than anything else, Andy touched on it, you know, a second ago, there is the potential, the possibilities that it can open up. I've been a massive advocate, as you know, for a museum for Rangers for pretty much as long as I've been involved in any kind of support or activism. I can't wait for that personally. But in the meantime, I think if you've got a venue that will draw footfall to the stadium, you know, before 2:30, when everyone just turns up to get into their seat, and people can spend money and it goes into the club and it becomes, you know, self-generating, all of that kind of thing, I'm really excited by it. And again, you know, when you see the fact that it looks futuristic, it looks modern, I think you can start to see where the money has gone. And you know, I'll do my board impression. I think that we wanted it to be best in class. I think it's getting there. So obviously, when we see the finished article, I think that it will be. Well, listen, do you know what I mean? I didn't want Andy to be the only.
I thought we were getting away with it, and now we'll light up Twitter with that one.
I didn't want Andy to be the only board shill on the programme, so I'm taking bullets for him, David. But the point is that that's exactly what we wanted. We can't wait for a project like this and see the investment that the fans have put in as well, by the way, the three of us included, and for it to be second rate. And I didn't think that at all from everything I've seen and all the reports that I've heard and people and the experiences of it and stuff as well. Very, very good. So let's see where it takes us next.
Yeah, although Andy, he's saying it's futuristic. Futuristic was Burt Rogers, a burger bar in Queens. Do you remember that?
What? The Burt Rogers burger bar?
Did you never go yet? Oh, right. There will be. It was in Queen Street in Glasgow in the early 80s. I'm sure there will be listeners who can remember. Yeah, and it was all done up like the spaceship and Burt Rogers, and they had what I can only describe, and I don't know the right word for it, but a person of restricted height, I think.
Biggie.
Yeah, as dressed up as that wee guy, as Biggie guy, Twiggy. So
was it Harrigan?
It could have been Harrigan, yes.
Was it Ross Wilson?
Hey.
That's you immediately back after the board Christmas.
That's it, exactly. It's a yin-yang with me.
Yeah, well, we'll have full coverage of the match on Wednesday night over on patreon.com/heartandhand. A new month starts, a good time to go and get signed up there. My thanks to our executive producers in London, Mike Lee and Paul Miles, and my thanks to my guests, first of all, the splendid Cammy Bell.
A pleasure as always, boys. Thank you.
To the wonderful Mr. the Sage of Soul Coats, Andy McGowan.
Best in class. That'll be your on your tombstone there, Cammy. You know, you ever think about slagging me again about the board and happy clapping.
I think I will, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I think he probably still could. Anyway, thanks for joining us, folks. We'll talk to you again later in the week. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Podcast Network.